Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Well, we are removed from the NFL draft, but we're not removed from conversation about the NFL draft. Certainly, there was a lot of talk about the Pac-12 players.
With the first pick in the 2024 NFL draft, the Chicago Bears select Caleb Williams, quarterback, Southern California.
Caleb Williams goes to the Bears. Then, of course, we later saw Michael Penix Jr. off the board, surprisingly, to the Falcons. Bo Nix to the Broncos. That all happened really fast in the first round of the draft. Got me thinking about, you know, an NFL scout's job. And you heard a lot of rumors and whispers and reports and a lot of speculation by the talking heads in the run-up to the draft. Some of it was right. Some of it was way out in left field, but got me thinking about next year's draft as well. And so Brentley Weissman is a former scout with the Chargers. He's also worked with a number of NFL teams, including the Raiders, Patriots. He knows Oregon football. He knows UCLA football, and he's joining us now. Brentley, thanks for making time, man.
Hey, John, thanks for having me. Always been a fan. Obviously, I went to school at University of Oregon, so being familiar with your work and happy to join the show.
Yeah, thanks for doing it. And, you know, shout out to Eugene. You're on there as well because the show is statewide. But, Brentley, give us an idea. Like, you know, when you see Bo Nix off the board so early, did that surprise you? Or what was the scuttlebutt among scouts as the draft approached?
You know, it was surprising to see him go at 12. It wasn't surprising to see him go with the Denver Broncos. I think many people in the media and within the league kind of penciled him as the Broncos' target. Now, it was tricky because the Broncos didn't have a second-round pick because they had to trade it for Sean Payton. But, you know, for me, I love Bo Nix. I think he's going to be a good quarterback in the NFL. I do think 12 was rich, and if you kind of pulled all 31 other GMs outside of Denver, they probably say the same thing. 12 was a little rich. But with Denver not having the draft capital and just didn't want to take the chance, they pulled the trigger there at 12.
Yeah, and Sean Payton kind of, you know, years before had not pulled the trigger. Patrick Mahomes, they were waiting for him to fall to them in the draft in New Orleans. And, you know, he sees a quarterback he wants, and I think he went up and got it. Give us an idea, you know, in that evaluation period that comes maybe between the last season and then the combine and the pro days, how do scouts kind of approach that? You've been in the trenches. Take us through kind of day in the life or a season in the life of a scout.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, starting out, call it training camp, right, where, you know, all the scouts are in the facility and having their meetings and kind of building out their schedule for the fall and, you know, which schools are quote-unquote A schools where – you would be visiting the campus twice throughout the course of the season, or B schools where you'd go through the campus once. You know, it depends on, you know, obviously like an Oregon would be an A school where we have, call it, you know, 7 to 10 draftable prospects, where a Sac State, for another example, is a B or C school where you might have one draftable prospect. So then you kind of create your schedule, do your fall visits and things like that, give your initial grades. Then you reconvene in December for draft meetings, and you kind of set your board. You then, you know, have your playoffs and et cetera. Then in February, right after the Senior Bowl, before the combine, you have your full-on draft meetings where you're in the war room with the full staff. Every area scout is going through their first kind of, call it 1 through 5 grades, and they read the reports. The GM and the scouting directors ask their questions, and then they place the name tag on the board. All of that is done pre-combine. So, for example, the Denver, their essentially full evaluation of Bo Nix was done all before the combine. It's really done kind of in the towards the end of December, heading into January, and it's finalized in February. That board that's done before the combine rarely changes. The pre-draft kind of movement and risers and fallers, a lot of that's just media driven, and it's the media kind of catching up to names they might have been late on. There's no real such thing as a drastic faller or a drastic riser in the eyes of the actual NFL decision makers outside of medical red flags.
I'm thinking about, you know, draft day. We see the images in the draft room, and sometimes there are scouts in the room or assistant GMs, player personnel people. As a scout, how do you avoid sort of that bias that can come with, you know, scouting your guy, and maybe you're scouting a certain region or a position group, and then you got other scouts that are advocating for their guy. You know, where, as a scout, how do you sort of balance the personal feeling of players that you're evaluating? And, you know, you're obviously trying to give your GM and your franchise great intel and information, but I've heard baseball scouts say that, you know, they get kind of attached to the players that they sign and are advocating for.
It's a challenge. You know, I think obviously every single scout would want their first round pick to come from a player from their region, right? A player that they wrote up, a player that they interviewed, a player that they presented to the GM. You know, oftentimes you kind of know early on that that's not going to be the case. You know, obviously you kind of have those five or three players who you're targeting depending on who's there, and you kind of have an idea. But certainly you do get attached to players throughout the process. You want them to be on your team. And for an area scout, your kind of bread and butter is the UDFA signings, right? That's really kind of where you have free reign, where you're the one calling the agents, you're the one negotiating the deals, and that's really where you can kind of let your, I don't want to call it prejudices, but your kind of affinity for certain players in your region, you could then leverage that into, you know, building relationships with agents, building relationships with those players, and then recruit them as a UDFA.
I love the intel in the background on this. Brentley Weissman is with us, former scout with the Chargers. He's also been involved with player personnel at Oregon and UCLA. You know, there's some Chip Kelly undertones there, Brentley. Give us an idea, you know, in college, what are you doing with college programs that's different maybe than the NFL job?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think, you know, when I was with UCLA and then even further, going back further with Oregon as an undergrad, the landscape has completely changed, right? There was no transfer portal in 2019, and you know, it wasn't so much of kind of player movement, right? It was more your more traditional, hey, high school recruiting and maybe a grad transfer here or there. You know, so back when I was within college recruiting department, it was very much a, hey, we're going to kind of host these kids in a much more of a kind of administrator role, where people don't know this, the position coaches in the college team are really the ones doing the scouting, doing the recruiting. The recruiting staff is really just there for more kind of admin support, whereas the NFL, you know, the scouts are actually the ones doing the evaluating, making the school calls, watching the tape, writing the scouting reports. That's not necessarily the case in college. Now, I do think that has changed drastically given the transfer portal. I think most teams in college football, at least some of the ones that are competing for championships, have a fully built out scouting staff whose sole job is to scout other teams across the country. That way, you know, if Oregon has a scout, I'm assuming, you know, they probably have assigned regions where one scout's watching the big, every other kind of Big Ten school. So if a player enters the portal, we have a report ready to go, give to Coach Lanning, hey, Coach Lanning, player X entered the portal. We already have all of his background, all of his academics, all of his injury history, all of his medical, and then Coach Lanning can quickly make the decision and offer. So, again, I think things have changed, but I do think nowadays recruiting departments are mirroring NFL scouting departments much more than ever.
Michael Penix Jr. goes to Atlanta. Did you have Penix that high on your board or your opinion of him?
Yeah, I can't tell you, John, how many radio spots I did kind of in the lead up to the draft. And, you know, Penix obviously was one of the big kind of talking points because he had such a wide variance of grades. I mean, I talked to a number of different West Coast area scouts who had a third round grade on him. And I couldn't believe it. I mean, as I mentioned, I'm an Oregon alum, I'm a big fan of Oregon. I go to a lot of games, and I went to two games that Penix played against us over the past year. And at some point you just have to accept that it matters if the quarterback can put the ball into the receiver's hands. And yes, that there's age concerns, there's durability concerns. I get all of that. He was obviously playing with a ton of talent around him, but time and time again, in the highest leverage moments, you know, the critical points of the game, he would put the ball where only his receiver can make the play on the ball. And at some point that has to matter. And because of that, I had Penix extremely high. I didn't have him quite as high as 8, but I knew he was going round 1. I just didn't know exactly kind of where he would fall in round 1. But I never once doubted his talent. I thought, you know, arguably put the best tape out of any of these quarterbacks, maybe outside of Jaden Daniels this past year. I thought he was outstanding. And I wasn't completely shocked he went top 10. Now, I was shocked he went to the Falcons. That's a whole other conversation. But the talent, to me, I thought was always kind of worthy of that high of a selection.
I want to look forward now. And, you know, and I think really this is what sparked our conversation. You tweeted just the other day that, you know, Josh Connerly, Oregon's big tackle, you think he'll be a high first-round pick. I've heard a lot of good things about Connerly. He potentially could be a top-3 pick in the draft. He's that good. But what do you see when you look at Josh Connerly?
Yeah. And, I have a lot of friends who still scout in the NFL, and it was funny. Like, one of the West Coast scouts texted me, hey, like, can you believe all these early 2025 mock drafts don't have Connerly in it? Like, I'm doing the West Coast, and Connerly is the only first-round grade I have given to a West Coast player. Like, he's that good. I'm like, okay, I knew he was good, but let me go out and check on the tape to see what you're seeing. Watch the tape, John, last weekend, and it's remarkable. You know, I think the high kind of tools you see, the athleticism, the foot quickness, the balance, the length, the ability to anchor, I thought it was all outstanding. And then, you know, he's really only been a kind of one-year kind of key starter. I know he kind of rotated in as a freshman, but last year was kind of his first year as a starter. And for him to just continue to get better and better as each game progressed, you can kind of see where he's heading in terms of his development. And with those tools, with that athleticism, with that kind of profile, the sky's the limit. And, you know, he's going to get the best coaching at Oregon, who's really developed into a offensive line factory and powerhouse. And so, you know, I'd be at this point in time, John, sitting here in May, I'd be floored if he wasn't at least a top 20 pick. And given how valuable left tackles are with those kind of traits, most likely going to be a top 10 pick.
We were talking earlier in the show about Dylan Gabriel, and I had published this photo the other day that yesterday, really, that showed him behind the offensive line. And the offensive line at Oregon is big, and Dylan Gabriel is under 6 feet. You know, he's probably really more like 5'10", 5'10 and a half. I don't know what he'll measure at. But it made me, for the first time, think about him being behind a big offensive line, playing against big defensive lines. How much of a concern is height at quarterback these days, the way teams play offense?
It's obviously you'd want someone who's taller, you know, big, strong quarterback sit back there, you know, like a Justin Herbert. Like, that is, you know, again, that's what you want. But Dylan Gabriel's height isn't going to be a hindrance in terms of his play, ability to play and make plays at Oregon. You know, nowadays the splits are so kind of wide in the college level. There's going to be massive throwing lanes and you know, there's things you could do within the pocket, get him, move him around and kind of move him off platform to create natural throwing windows. And so I don't think it's going to be a huge issue. And then Dylan Gabriel, he's a unique player where he has the ability to kind of throw off platform, throw out different launch points and kind of different launch angles. And so he's, you know, I always say he's been the same height his entire life and he's made it work. And so I don't think he's going to be a big kind of adjustment or change here at Oregon.
We're talking to Brentley Weissman, former scout with the Chargers, also has worked with the Raiders and a variety of college teams. Are there other players that, you know, you walk away from the spring game thinking about as a scout, or players in the western part of the United States that, you know, you have evaluated and you continue to have eyes on?
Yeah, just kind of sticking with Oregon for a quick second, I think Jordan Birch is somebody who, quite frankly, the way he closed out the season, I was shocked to see him return to Oregon. You know, his game against Oregon State last year was just dominant tape going against Tulisi Fuwaga, who was a top 13 overall pick. I mean, Jordan Birch manhandled him throughout the course of that game. And so, you know, he's a former five-star recruit. I think he's 6'6", 290. And my scouting buddy was telling me, you know, they're expecting him to set combine records next February in terms of what he's going to run and how he's going to test. So very high toolsy prospect. Needs to kind of have more consistent production as a pass rusher. He doesn't get home quite as often as he should, but the talent is clearly there, and the run game ability is outstanding. So I think he has a chance to take a high jump. And, you know, right now I gave him kind of that mid to low second round grade, but the arrow is screaming up, and he can easily work his way into that back half of the first round. Other West Coast players, I mean, obviously the Colorado kids. I mean, Travis Hunter, to me, is arguably one of the best players in the country. Just a special talent, corner receiver out of Colorado. He's just a dynamic athlete, just really natural playmaker. He's outstanding. Jaden Ott, the running back from Cal. He's really good, really explosive, outstanding vision, contact balance. He can do a lot. I don't know how he'll get drafted, but he's going to be one of the better players in the country. And then Arizona, you know, McMillan, the receiver, number 4. I don't know how to pronounce his first name quite yet, but he is arguably, you know, the number 1, if not number 2, receiver in the country. He'll be a high first-round pick next year. And so the West Coast, even though, you know, unfortunately the Pac-12, died, there's still going to be a lot of good ball play on the West Coast and a lot of NFL talent.
What do you do with Shador as a potential first-round pick? What do you need to see from him this year to cement him as a first-round guy?
Yeah, you know, I'll be honest. I was a little skeptical of Shador Sanders. You know, I didn't watch a ton of Jackson State film and you know, wasn't quite sure of the hype and, you know, was he just really more of this the name or is the hype warranted? And I came away really impressed. I do think he's a natural thrower of the football. I think he's obviously a really good athlete. He can create plays with his legs. He's, you know, he's a pass first quarterback who's also really athletic. You know, he doesn't look to run. He looks to extend the play, but also make plays down the field with his arm. Really good accuracy, touch, ball placement. I think, like, again, he's a very natural thrower of the football. I don't think he has quite the first-round franchise, you know, quarterback-level arm strength. I don't know if he has that level of arm. I do think, again, he's very accurate and he makes quick decisions and things like that, but I don't know from a traits perspective if he has the gas in his arm, the velocity in his arm like a Penix. And then, again, I think a lot of his question mark is going to be off the field. You know, he obviously had that kind of Twitter, whatever you want to call it, last week. And that, you know, in the eyes of NFL evaluators is not going to look good, no matter how kind of minuscule it was, a singular tweet. But that is not a good look. And so I'm sure that's going to be a top of the conversation throughout the fall. And then obviously as we get closer to draft time next April. But he has talent. I'm not comfortable kind of just putting him in the top 5 how many other people are. But next year in a weak quarterback class, it wouldn't shock me if he kind of works his way up there throughout the course of the season.
So that stuff matters because, you know, I mean, the perception in the NFL is sometimes that, you know, that stuff doesn't matter. Is it a maturity thing when a guy's tweeting like that?
Absolutely. It's just, you know, you're drafting a quarterback to really be the face of your franchise, to be at the podium game in, game out, every single day at practice. Like, there's just a lot more that comes with the job than just playing on the field. And you know, maybe one day Shador will understand that, you know, and he might think, hey, like, I'm just defending my dad, and it's just a small one innocent tweet, but it's not. It's you have to kind of be that guy, the leader, the face of the team, and just it's a 24/7, 365 job. It's not just when you're, you know, on the field leading a game-winning drive. It matters, and all that matters. And, you know, I think nowadays, you know, with everything kind of social media being at the forefront of these kids' lives, like, it's never mattered more, arguably, right? Where, you know, all it takes is one mistake by one of these prospects, and, you know, it can damage the image of your franchise. And so I do think it's going to be a massive kind of conversation. You know, ultimately, is it going to hurt and kill his draft stock? I don't know, but I certainly know it didn't help it.
Teteroa McMillan.
Yeah, that's it. He's outstanding. Thank God Oregon is not playing him this year, because he is a special receiver.
Yeah, Teteroa. I had to look up the pronunciation guide from the school, so I don't want to mess it up. Brantley, I appreciate you, man. I'd love to get you back on, maybe as the college season's going on, just to get your evaluation of what you're seeing and how it's playing out. I think it's all fascinating, as you know, there's more interest than ever on the draft, and everybody's an expert, yep. And so it's nice to talk to somebody who's actually been in those rooms and had those conversations.
John, anytime you want me on, just hit me up. I'm happy to join. As I mentioned, been a big fan of yours since going back to when I was still in school. So really a pleasure to join, and thank you for having me.
All right, Brantley Weissman, there he goes. Former scout with the Chargers, the Raiders. He was player personnel at UCLA and Oregon for a spell as well. Good stuff there. We got parting thoughts coming up. Leave it here.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.